This week, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali have withdrawn from the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. The three countries say they were dissatisfied with the inability of ECOWAS to help them fight jihadists. The countries are now turning to Russia, Iran, and Turkey for support. What does this realignment mean for the Sahel region? Straight Talk Africa starts right now.
Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Peter Clotty. Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali have formally withdrawn from the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS. All three countries are under military rule and say they were dissatisfied with sanctions imposed on them by ECOWAS, sanctions they considered them, quote, illegal. This move is a serious blow to the influence and cohesion of ECOWAS. The group was founded in 1975 to promote regional integration, security cooperation, and democratic governance in the region. Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali have now created their own group, the Alliance of Sahel States, and their people took to the streets, rejoicing about the new prospect, holding signs saying, "Long live the Alliance of Sahel State, united and prosperous, down with parlor slaves of ECOWAS."
We've understood that this ECOWAS, which was created as People's ECOWAS, no longer serves the people. It serves a master outside ECOWAS, that is imperialism. You are well aware that after the regime changes in Mali, Burkina, and Niger, ECOWAS created a standby force to say they would attack a founding member of ECOWAS. Yet, this standby force should have responded from the first day terrorism made our lives impossible.
We are not afraid of any decision. We are ready for anything. We are ready for our sovereignty.
If Mali produces cotton, Niger should be able to buy Malian cotton, process it, and sell it to Burkina and Mali. If Mali produces uranium, Burkina should be able to process it and generate energy. I dream that the Alliance of Sahel States will manufacture cars and weapons, and that it will develop.
AES has only existed for a short time, but the free movement of people and goods is already a reality. We know that if we continue to support our three leaders, all African countries will join AES because we will truly be able to liberate Africa.
Many West African observers fear that the withdrawal of Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali from ECOWAS might strengthen the jihadist movement in the Sahel. For more insight into this developing story, I'm joined by Ambassador Abdel Fattah Moussa, who is the ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security. He joins us from Abuja, Nigeria. And from Lagos, Nigeria, I'm also joined by Christopher Ogumodede, a consultant and analyst of West African Politics, Security, and International Relations. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Thanks for having us.
Ambassador Moussa, let me come to you. You heard the reaction from citizens of these three countries. ECOWAS appear to be very unpopular there. What say you?
Yes, Peter, don't downplay the role of social media today. You know, right? We know about the realities in the three countries that have withdrawn from, ECOWAS, and the reality
Well, we have a problem with your link there. But Chris, let me come to you. Chris, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
What are your thoughts on what appears to be an unpopular sub-regional organization, ECOWAS, in Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali?
Yes, it's fairly understandable if you look at issues through the prism of the three countries, but much more broadly in the West Africa region. This is an organization that was founded in 1975 by a lot of coup leaders who overthrew civilian-led governments. This is an organization that throughout its history has had a checkered record of defending, supporting, rationalizing extra constitutional third term bids, overthrowing civilian government by military leaders. It has overlooked or looked the other way from poorly held elections in a number of countries across the region. So it's I'm personally in the perhaps I'm in the minority of those people who hold the view that I hold, but I do not necessarily see ECOWAS's troubles as having begun with the recent wave of coups in that began in 2020. I see the issue as foundational. It dates much longer back, and I think it's a mistake for people to restrict the critiques of ECOWAS to Mali, Burkina, and Niger, as opposed to what are foundational, as I say, problems that have existed with the organization from the beginning.
Ambassador Boza, let me come to you. The unpopularity of ECOWAS, it seems, in Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali.
So what I am saying is that we should not downplay the role of social media. Yes, there are grievances in these countries, not necessarily against ECOWAS, against, I think, what they claim, you know, to be the role of foreign powers, particularly France, in their countries. And by extension, they are blaming ECOWAS, adding them to, you know, this country, saying that France and others are those controlling ECOWAS, and so they are moving away, you know, from, you know, ECOWAS. That is the first issue. The second is that ECOWAS is not helping with the security conundrum in the Sahel. And I just want to take on this but two particular issues. Number one, on security. Don't forget, insecurity in the Sahel reached its zenith after the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya, when the terrorists migrated to the Sahel. And following the coup in 2012, ECOWAS was the first regional organization to plan to deploy the ECOWAS forces into Mali at the time. And it was opposed by not less than the UN and then the others, and even the members of Mali's junta at the time itself. That is number one. Number two, when the G5 Sahel joined forces, somewhere in 2017 to join, including countries like Senegal, have always been a bit insular and do not want outsiders actually to join them in doing anything.
Ambassador, your line is straight. Well, Ambassador, we'll come back to you. Your line seemed to be fluctuating. Chris, can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, some people are blaming ECOWAS' initial approach. Some say even considering military action to force these countries who are under military rule in these respective countries to speedily return to constitutional rule, which they said did not appear to have gone down well with them. And the engagement and the false miscalculation appear to have angered these three countries to decide to quit the regional bloc. What are your thoughts?
Sure. I mean, that's the position of the three juntas, that ECOWAS's calls for return to constitutional rule, as you outlined, was a bridge too far for them. And in the case of Niger, the threats to launch a military invasion of Niger to presumably reinstate Mohamed Bazoum, the president at the time who was overthrown. That appears to have been a miscalculation on the part of ECOWAS leaders, because it galvanized public opinion, not just in Niger, but in the other three countries, and even elsewhere in the region, I might add, because this is something that perhaps gets lost in the conversation about the split in ECOWAS. In Nigeria, for instance, when President Bola Tinubu, who is the current chairperson of ECOWAS, called for that ECOWAS summit in which the leaders put out the communique threatening to go to war. That rallied public opinion in Nigeria as well, particularly in northern Nigeria, where many people have familial, economic, cultural, commercial ties to people in Niger, both in the south and in other parts of Niger. There was a backlash, even in President Tinubu's own party, I should add, where senators from the Northern Nigerian caucus of the All Progressive Congress, which President Tinubu belongs to, came out against the proposed invasion. So it's a mistake, as I alluded to earlier, to view this in isolation from broader trends that have taken place in the region over the last decade, as I say, where a number of things have happened in which ECOWAS was either complicit in or enabled in many instances regional leaders who've done terrible things that they now purport to oppose. So I think it's a mistake for some folks to due to either social media or to Russian disinformation or to a turn against democracy. I think that's a mistaken way to analyze the issue.
Ambassador Musa, welcome back. My question to you is, how did it go wrong for ECOWAS? Because the accusation is that ECOWAS miscalculated greatly and did not use, the tactics of diplomacy to rein in these military regimes in order to guide them or help them, push them towards coming back to constitutional rule instead of going back. Because last time where the Ghanaian president was officially installed in Accra, the military leaders appeared to be very popular when they were resoundly applauded when their names were mentioned. So they said ECOWAS appeared to have miscalculated and faulted and wrongly, badly approached the military leaders. As an official of ECOWAS, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Peter. Let's get clear.
Well, it's time for a short break. We apologize for the problems that we are having with Abdel Fattah Musa Link, but we'll return soon and we'll continue with our discussion on the departure from ECOWAS of Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso and what that might mean for the Sahel region. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
According to Center for Reproductive Rights, one in every five adolescent girls across Africa gets pregnant before the age of 19. And unfortunately, many of these young girls lack access to education due to economic and cultural barriers and often end up pregnant and shouldering the responsibility of motherhood at tender age. On this episode of Our Voices, we will be talking about the physical, mental, and socioeconomic consequences of teen pregnancy on both the mother and the child. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
Welcome back. You are with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters here in Washington, D.C. We are discussing the recent departure of Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso from the ECOWAS and what this redistribution of power may mean for the security of the Sahel. My guest is Christopher Ogumdede, consultant and analyst of West African politics, security, and international relations. Let me come to you, Chris. Do you see these countries returning to ECOWAS anytime soon based on their decision to officially withdraw? Since 1975, they have been members of ECOWAS geographically and geopolitically.
Yeah, they are founding members. They are not just members. They are founding members. They were among the members who signed the Treaty of Lagos in May of 1975. So it's a big blow to lose three founding members of what I should point out is a foundational regional economic bloc in Africa's institutional architecture. So in that sense, it's a blow. As to your question of, do I see a possibility of them returning? Absolutely. The way diplomacy works is that in many parts of the world, in many geographic regions, there is occasionally more than one regional bloc, right? You know, in Europe, there's the Visegrad group, for instance, some of whose members are also members of the European Union. It's not unique to Africa to, or even West Africa, to have disputes inside a bloc that may cause fissures, that may cause, you know, separations of some kind where other entities go on to form other groups. That does not necessarily preclude the possibility that should there be a breakaway, they may return to the fold. More importantly, is a point that I think gets lost. ECOWAS is not synonymous with West Africa. If ECOWAS, for whatever reason, ceases to exist, something will replace it, for the simple reason that the people, the culture, the individuals, the families, the businesses in the region have broad linkages that have existed for centuries. Those linkages will not break because ECOWAS does not exist. The desire for the people of West Africa to be culturally, economically, politically connected to one another will continue to exist. In that regard, there will be many more attempts to integrate the region. So it's as much as it is important to think about what ECOWAS means and its significance, we shouldn't get too tied up in the idea of ECOWAS as an entity that exists. It's only existed for 50 years. ECOWAS does not have a divine right of existence. Something can and will replace it. The question is under what conditions and what needs to happen for us to get there.
Well, Chris, one of the key reasons why they decided to withdraw officially from ECOWAS, they argue, is the failure of ECOWAS to help them come back or fight jihadists in the Sahel. However, since they've come to power, these jihadist or Islamist groups are still attacking unarmed civilians and with some successes. And some people are saying that they were using that as a pretext not to return to constitutional rule, but to maintain power. Your thoughts?
I think that's broadly correct. The juntas in Mali, Niger, and Burkina have every incentive not to want to return to civilian rule, for the simple reason that most people who take power don't want to give it back. That's a human instinct. They also have popular opinion on their side, right? The regimes, the governments they overthrew, whether it's Kabore in Burkina, whether it's Bazoum in Niger, or whether it's Ibeka Keita in Mali, were unpopular leaders who did lots of authoritarian things in their own right. I think in as much as it might be popular to condemn military juntas, and I certainly do not hold any brief for them, there were things that happened before, you know, a coup needs a socio-political context in which it happens. The context in those three countries is that supposedly democratic leaders, many of, you know, certainly in the case of Bazoum, who emerged through some very dubious means and, you know, perpetrated a number of authoritarian acts in his time in power, was someone who, it turned out, was far more popular overseas, certainly in Western capitals, than in his own country. This is a man who cracked down on protesters, who won a popular opposition leader in the election that brought him in, was barred from running. You know, there were a number of things that Bazoum was also an individual who rationalized the coup, essential coup, in neighboring Chad, where Mohamed Deby took over from his father, Idris Deby, when he died. He did not follow the constitutional process. Mohamed Bazoum defended that process. So it's very important, as I say, to put these things in broader perspective. So while it is true that those juntas are being, you know, they are taking advantage of the opportunity to hold on to power indefinitely, it's not that far-fetched for the people in these three countries to consider that these individuals who were overthrown were not meeting their own aims and aspirations. And when you do not give people what they want, they will sometimes look elsewhere.
Well, but you know, these three countries are landlocked countries. They depend on members of the ECOWAS, current members, in spite of their relations with their neighbors. Of course, Benin had a problem with its close neighbor. But Togo, some are suggesting, could be a way for them, instead of using Benin's port, to use Togolese port for, of course, Ghana's port as well, especially for Burkina Faso. Where do you see things moving from here in terms of this prospects of these realignments that we are seeing in the West African region?
That's right. Well, geography, I'm certainly not, I wouldn't say is destiny. I'm not a determinant in that view, in that way, but geography is not insignificant, certainly. Mali, Niger, Burkina have borders with, among other countries, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana and Togo. They are bound to them indefinitely. You know, whatever diplomatic relations exist between the two capitals, the people in the region will not cease to interact with one another. As you allude to, Burkina Faso relies on the port of Lomé for a lot of its maritime commercial activity. Niger relies on Cotonou for its maritime activity. Mali relies on the port of Dakar for its maritime activity. People from the three Sahelian countries live in large numbers in Cote d'Ivoire, Togo, Ghana, and other parts of the region. Here in Nigeria, there are so many people from the Sahelian countries. So these are realities that governments, capitals, cannot wish away. And I think that ECOWAS leaders, to their credit, recognize this when they chose to, for the time being, allow freedom of movement for the time being for the citizens of Mali, Burkina, and Niger, who were formerly part of ECOWAS, but now are members of the AES and will break away. I think that was a good step. That was conciliatory on their part. And that recognizes the things that I'm saying, that there can be no breakaway in the real sense of what that word means. It may signal the termination of diplomatic relationships, but the commercial, family, the political, social relationships that bind communities well beyond the reach of ECOWAS and formal states will not go away. So I think it's unrealistic to believe that simply because political relationships have terminated, that means the end of everything else. And I think as well, the Togolese also recognize this, because some weeks ago, the foreign minister of Togo said that it was not impossible for his country to join the AES. And I think that, again, recognizes the things that I'm alluding to, that I'm saying, that Togo recognizes many of its people have ties to countries, that to people in the three countries. Many citizens of those countries live in Lomé, Atakpamé, and other parts of Togo. So these things are not going to change anytime soon. And I think it's high time. Perhaps it won't happen immediately in the heat of the moment, but these governments, I think, eventually will come to recognize this, and they will find ways to work together in whatever capacity that will be.
Talking about working together, you know, the new Ghanaian president just selected or chose a representative to represent Ghana, you know, in relations to the AES, the new Sahelian nations. But do you think ECOWAS should continue with the engagement of these countries, especially knowing that they are founding members of the organization in spite of their separation now, you know, that things could get better, relations could be mended, and that they could return probably in the near future? Do you see the engagement of ECOWAS proceeding from here?
Yes, I do, and I think it should continue. I think President Mahama did the right thing by appointing an envoy to continue negotiations and engagement with the AES. It's important that West African political leaders, bureaucratic leaders, diplomats continue to have discussions, to continue to engage. In diplomacy, you know, you never stop talking, right? You may never come to a final agreement, but you have talks to have more talks, as it were. So I think that President Mahama did the right thing, and I would certainly encourage other West African leaders to do the same.
Some are suggesting that Nigeria, as a big boy in the region, one of, you know, the headquarters of ECOWAS being in Nigeria, should be seen doing more, especially with its close association with Niger, helping with developmental efforts and all that, and that Nigeria taking the effort of negotiating or reaching out to them, you know, smoking the peace pipe with them would help a great deal. Your thoughts?
I certainly agree with that. I mean, I wouldn't suppose that the Nigerian government is doing nothing in terms of the outreach you talk about, but they certainly can do more. They should do more. I think that the Nigerian government would do well to stay away from being baited into an antagonistic engagement with the Nigerian government along the lines of the type which came from the National Security Advisor's office. I think that they should simply focus on the big picture and continue to find a way to reach a rapprochement with the Nigerian government. It's in Nigeria's interest, it's in Niger's interest, it's in the region's interest.
Your thoughts briefly before we go, Chris, on ECOWAS's next steps in trying to unify, as it were, the rest of the members who are still in the group, because some are suggesting that there could be other countries who might as well join the AES.
As I say, I don't necessarily see it as bad for the region that some countries might join the AES, but what I do think is most important is for ECOWAS to be introspective about the first 50 years of its existence, what it's done wrong, what it could have done better, how it can make the organization stronger going forward in terms of creating the self-sufficiency and interdependence and political stability for the region's countries. So I think that that should be their focus going forward. And I don't necessarily buy binaries of ECOWAS versus AES.
Thank you very much, Chris. We might have to leave it here. Ambassador Abdel Fattah Musa and Christopher Ogumdede, thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. We'll see you next time. Good evening, Africa.